Auhea oko eko ka aha. Inahe kuleana imua o kea aha ho o kolokolo ki e ki e hano hano o ka moku aina o Hawaii. E naui mai, e malio mai, i lohe ia ka leo. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye, all persons having any business before this honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii, draw nigh, give your attention and you shall be heard.
Please call the case.
Case number SCWC 19563, State of Hawaii versus Mannion. Arguing for the petitioner, Alan M. Kaneshiro. Arguing for the respondent, Brian R. Vincent, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney. Argument on the merits.
All right, good afternoon, aloha everyone. Our proceeding today is being broadcast live on the Judiciary's YouTube channel. During the proceeding, should a justice have a question, they'll raise their hand virtually and I'll call upon them at the earliest opportunity. I'll start today by asking our attorneys to introduce themselves in the order in which they will be arguing.
Good afternoon, Alan Kaneshiro on behalf of petitioner appellee Daniel Mannion.
Thank you, Mr. Kaneshiro. Well, Mr. Vincent, you're muted still.
I apologize, sorry. Deputy Prosecuting Attorney Brian Vincent, representing the state of Hawaii.
All right, thank you, Mr. Vincent. Just to confirm, Mr. Kaneshiro, you'll have 22 minutes for your argument. You reserved 8 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll give you a warning at that point. Mr. Vincent, you have 30 minutes with a 5 minute warning. And at the end of both of our attorney's time, you'll see a light and hear a tone to remind you that you're at the end of your allotted total 30 minutes. Mr. Kaneshiro, would you please proceed?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Honorable Chief Justice Reckonwald and Associate Justices. Alan Kaneshiro representing the petitioner appellee Daniel Mannion. In our application for a writ of certiorari, we present a single question to the court whether the ICA gravely erred in failing to suppress all evidence and statements, including the standardized field sobriety test results that were obtained after the medical rule-out questions as fruit of the poisonous tree. The ICA held that the answers to the medical rule-out questions were the product of un-Mirandized custodial interrogation and suppressed the answers to the medical rule-out questions. However, they did not address the fruit of the poisonous tree argument. In Hawaii, the fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine prohibits the use of evidence at trial which comes to light as the result of the exploitation of a previous illegal act of the police. And I would note that it's the state's burden to establish exploitation or no benefit gained as well as attenuation. I think that once the defense presents, I know it's not a but-for analysis, but once the defense presents but-for the answers to the medical rule-out questions, the field sobriety test would not have occurred. It then becomes incumbent upon the state to establish either attenuation or no exploitation or no benefit gained. The ultimate question that the fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine poses is, disregarding the prior illegality, would the police nevertheless have discovered the evidence? And you know, while it is the state's burden to establish that there is no benefit gained, you know, as to the benefit, first off, at the suppression hearing, the prosecuting attorney asked Officer Morgan, is it necessary to ask these questions to administer the test safely? And Officer Morgan said, yes. So even under the state's theory at the hearing on the motion to suppress, the medical rule-out questions are necessary in order to administer the standardized field sobriety test. And with respect to what benefit is gained in this particular case and on this record, Mr. Mannion answered no to all the medical rule-out questions, that he didn't have any physical defects or speech impediments, that he wasn't taking any medication, that he wasn't under the care of a doctor or dentist for anything, et cetera. And by eliciting those statements, by Mr. Mannion answering no to all those statements, it green-lighted the administration of the standardized field sobriety test. Now, benefit gained, our position would be that any discovery or observation by the police that is inculpatory or that can be used as evidence against the person at trial would be a benefit gained. Anything that would be detrimental to the defendant. And, in this situation, the benefit gained is the officer being able to come to court and say, hey, there are no external factors. We asked the medical rule out questions. There are no physical defects, no medical factors that could have affected the standardized field sobriety test. Therefore, based on my training and experience, any errors on the field sobriety test were the result of an intoxicant. And the court can use that as substantive evidence of intoxication.
Mr. Kanashiro, a question from Justice Wilson.
Sure. Thank you.
Justice Wilson.
Thank you, CJ. Mr. Kanashiro, I was wondering if you could help me with this analysis as to whether the fruit of the poisonous tree would apply to this standard field sobriety test under the analysis that the questions that were asked prior to the administration of the test as to whether Mr. Mannion understood the instructions and whether he had any questions actually could not be seen as reasonably likely to lead to an incriminating response. I think there has been some mention on the part of the government that maybe the Muniz case somehow indicated that there wouldn't really be a likelihood that those questions would lead to an incriminating response. And I wanted to get your understanding of that, especially given in this case, we have some medical rule out questions that I think you pointed out the circuit court judge found were a precondition to the administration of the standard field sobriety test. So how do you respond to the idea that those questions that preceded the test weren't actually reasonably likely to lead to an incriminating response?
Sure. So thank you for your question, Justice Wilson. If you're referring to the questions are asked after the instructions are given, do you understand the instructions? And do you have any questions? Mr. Mannion is charged not with being over 0.08 breath or blood. He's being charged under a theory that he was operating a vehicle while his normal mental faculties were impaired or his ability to care for himself and guard against casualty were diminished. And so when you're asking the questions, do you understand essentially my instructions and what I'm telling you, you're really asking the person to disclose the contents of their mind, their level of understanding, and whether or not their mental faculties are impaired. I think it goes directly to the heart of the issue, is whether their mental faculties are impaired. If a person...
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but in that regard, considering that the medical rule out questions have not only been asked but answered, does the nature of the answers, that is ruling out any other alternatives, mean that these questions about do you understand become even more focused in terms of an incriminating way to try to determine what the mental state is of the defendant?
I would say so. No, I'm not saying that the police have perhaps an insidious purpose by asking these questions. But I don't think under the interrogation analysis, the objective purpose of the police or even subjective purpose of the police factors into whether or not it's interrogation. Questions can have a dual purpose, like the medical rule out questions. I have no doubt that they are partially asked to determine if somebody is medically fit to perform. I mean, not all of the questions, but some of them. But the bottom line is the inquiry is whether or not reasonably likely to elicit an incriminating response. So I believe that you are correct that after the medical questions are asked and then the officer asks the follow-up questions, do you understand the instructions and do you have any questions? You know, it is further delving into the person's mental faculties. And if they answer the questions no, you know, that obviously can be used as evidence at their trial that this person couldn't understand our simple instructions. And if they answer the question yes, and they don't perform as instructed, that yes answer is also going to be used against them at trial.
We're getting some echo. So perhaps Justice Wilson, if you muted, we'll see if that's the source of it. Was that the end of your answer, Mr. Kaneshiro? Please continue.
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
Okay. Justice Wilson, any follow-up?
Thank you, CJ. Not at this time. Thank you.
Mr. Kaneshiro, I wanted to ask you, you know, our cases talk about exploitation of the illegality. And, you know, in Poipuni, you know, the idea was, you know, absent this search warrant that lacked probable cause, the police officers wouldn't have been in a position to ask a question which would lead them to evidence. This situation here seems quite different in terms of, you know, any exploitation of the illegality of the medical rule out questions. The rule you're arguing for seems to be much more expansive than what we've previously recognized in terms of exploiting or obtaining a benefit. How would you respond to that?
Thank you. And in preparing for this oral argument, I thought about this a lot. And I think what makes it so difficult to analyze this particular situation is we always think of the typical situation, you know, say for example, an un-Mirandized statement that was taken in pursuant to custodial interrogation and the individual says, hey, yeah, by the way, I have drugs in my closet and guns in my shed. In that particular instance, you know, those crimes would be possession crimes, where a person's statements are disclosing the location or the existence of some illegal item. This is not a case where possession comes into play at all. This is a case where the illegal act is having your normal mental faculties being impaired. And the standardized field sobriety test results are evidence of that particular element in the same way that finding drugs or firearms as a result of a Miranda violation is evidence of possession. So I think that it's not necessarily stretching or expanding the rule. It's kind of being applied to a different circumstance.
But if the police have their own internal policy or practice of not, you know, asking or not conducting a test, how is it exploiting, you know, in the traditional sense of fruit of the poisonous tree, how is there exploitation if really what's being exploited, I guess, in your view, is just the police's practice of not going forward unless particular questions are answered? Isn't that... seems different in many ways from learning about the location of a gun or leading to a subsequent statement like Trinque, where you know someone was then interrogated again later. Those seem to be situations in which you know external law is somehow being or an advantage is being gained by finding something or by subverting some rights down the road.
And thank you. That's kind of what I'm talking about is you know. The exploitation of an illegal statement leading to some discovery of physical evidence like a gun or drugs. I mean, the exploitation of the medical rule out questions leads to the discovery of evidence, which is the results of the standardized field sobriety test. And, you know, what the medical rule out questions do is, and this is the exploitation, is they basically lock a person in. I mean, they box a person in so that they cannot say at trial that they had anything physically wrong with them or medically wrong with them. And likewise, the questions, do you understand the instructions? Do you have any questions? It boxes them in so that at trial, they cannot come and say, you know, I didn't understand the instructions completely, you know, or the officer didn't allow me to ask any questions. That's how they're being exploited. It locks them into their answers very early on, such that the results of the standardized field sobriety test can only be attributed to an intoxicant.
We have questions from Justice Wilson and then Justice Edens. Justice Wilson.
I'll defer to Justice Edens. I've asked a lot of questions, CJ. Go ahead. Well, Justice Edens.
Mr. Connoisseur, you're just mentioning the medical rule-outs and how they assist officers in ruling out anything other than intoxication as an explanation for the field sobriety test performance. I think, is that what I understand you saying?
I mean, I don't think that it rules out everything, but it definitely narrows their scope to an intoxicant.
Okay, and then let's say just hypothetically, somebody does answer in response to the officer's rule out questions and say, hey, look, I have a glass eye. And you know, the glass eye is really nice. I took it from somebody else's eye. And you know, that then could perhaps lead to an investigation from that statement to something else. And when the CJ was talking about traditional classic interrogation, that's sort of something what I think of as one piece of evidence leading to another. Here, you know, we have a field sobriety test performance. That's presumably the fruit, right? And it doesn't strike me, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, or try to enlighten me here, that exploiting a compelled incriminating statement, I have a glass eye, I have a bum knee, I've been taking medication, how really is that a fruit relating to the overall context of what's happened?
Sure. Thank you, Justice Edens. You know, I think that, as I mentioned before, the answers are going to dictate the quality of the results. Or the answers may result in the results not being observed at all. I mean, if the answers are, I guess, given a certain way, the test may not happen. But
okay, let me ask that. Is that then, when we're talking about an investigative edge from the medical rule-outs, it strikes me there's differences. Is we have the test itself, and that's what you're saying is the fruit. But it's a little bit different, the explanation of the results from the medical rule-outs versus just the test itself being exploited. Can you help me out here?
Correct. And so, you know, the results and the quality of the results really are the keystone of what the field sobriety test is supposed to uncover, right? And it is that investigative edge, it's that benefit that is conferred upon the government by asking the medical rule out questions, asking if they understand,
I'm sorry for interjecting here. I'm looking now, especially with body cam evidence, and there's a lot more body camera evidence coming in, and that presumably would be the fruit or the exploitation from the medical rule out questions, as far as your line of argument is. But is it really derived? Is that body cam average really derived or from an exploitation of any of the medical rule out questions? Or again, is that just a way, the medical rule outs are just a way to interpret that particular fruit?
Well, I think that you know, according to the record in this case, the state elicited testimony that it is necessary. The medical rule out questions are necessary for the test to occur. And so if the medical rule out questions are necessary, then it would be exploitation.
And let me follow up on one point I saw on the record there. Didn't Officer Morgan say also that when asked about the medication, that it would be noted down, but it wouldn't affect the way she gave directions? And that to me would suggest that the field sobriety test and the results, the fruit, were actually predicated not on the test takers, the suspect, the driver's answers. And therefore, I'm wondering what the investigative edge would be if that were the case.
Well, I mean, I think that when we're looking at this record versus, you know, the idea of medical rule out questions being interrogation and exploitation, I mean, in that hypothetical, that he would have administered the test the same if somebody had said they were on medication. You know, medication, if you're on medication coupled with alcohol, it's not a defense to OVUII pursuant to Furman Bliet. But, you know, I think it could actually, in court, that answer, regardless of how the field sobriety test turned out, that answer would be incriminating evidence.
Justice Wilson, your question.
Thank you, CJ. Mr. Conashure, you were being asked questions, I guess, about what does it mean to be a fruit of the illegal action. And in this case, help me, it just seems to me that this is a straightforward matter where the evidence has established unequivocally that there has been a significant evidentiary basis for conviction derived from the improper asking of the medical rule out questions. In other words, it is clear that but for the actions that were illegal, there wouldn't be the field sobriety test. Now, the extent to which in other scenarios, there might be an edge that's greater or lesser given to the government by virtue of the illegal action that's taken place doesn't seem to be that operative here. I mean, this is relatively clearly incriminating evidence, the field sobriety test. So I wanted to get you to respond to the idea that actually this isn't evidence that's derived from the illegal activity because the police do this as a matter of routine. They always ask these questions about, do you understand the questions? And then when the field sobriety test is given, and certainly there's case law that establishes the field sobriety test itself may not be seen as some form of interrogation. But of course, that's not an issue here, right? We're just talking about a link that has been established. So what is your response to the idea that the link really doesn't matter? It's not relevant if the police do this as a matter of routine. They would go ahead and ask these questions anyways. And if it was done properly and they asked the questions, in other words, it wasn't done in relation to the medical rule out questions, it would be admissible because the questions themselves would lead to a standard field sobriety test. And under those circumstances, it'd be admissible.
Well, I mean, I think what you're asking is what, well, you know, I'm not sure, so if I'm not answering your question, but, you know, if you look at state versus.
Could you mute? I think, again, we're getting some feedback, at least I am. Thank you.
If you look at State versus Kazanis, you know, in Kazanis, the court made it very clear, this honorable court made it very clear that the, you know, subjective intent of the officers, whether this be standard police procedure, whether it be part of the process, part and parcel, and something that, you know, happens every time there's an OVUII investigation, that doesn't necessarily, well, not doesn't necessarily, but it doesn't factor into whether or not, you know, it is interrogation. And once the interrogation is established, and then we put forth, you know, the but-for analysis, then the burden shifts to the state to show no benefit gained, attenuation, or no exploitation. And, you know, as I mentioned previously, and the answers to the medical rule-out questions will be used against the person in their criminal trial, and it will affect the quality of the results of the field sobriety test. It will validate or not the results of the standardized field sobriety test, or it could result in the standardized field sobriety test not being administered at all.
Mr. Kaneshiro, Justice Nakayama has a question.
Mr. Kaneshiro, I have a question regarding your last response, and that is the answers to the questions regarding whether or not the defendant would agree to a field sobriety test would affect the quality of the field sobriety test. How would that be? How would the answers affect the quality?
Of the medical rule-out questions?
No, I thought you were talking about the questions and whether or not they would take the field sobriety, or even actually, even if the field sobriety test, how would that affect the quality of the field sobriety test?
Sure. You know, if it, in, as in the, this case, if the person answers no to all the medical rule-out questions, they've essentially, as I mentioned before, boxed themselves in at trial. The officer will testify.
The test will remain the same. Just the fact that they asked the question or answered it won't affect the quality of the test itself. You're talking about evidence at trial, right?
Well, and that's not entirely true, because if a person were to answer questions like I am taking medication or I have, you know, a torn ACL, that would affect the quality of the test results.
But that's not the answer that's affecting it. It's the torn ACL that's affecting. So it's not the question itself that's affecting the results of the test, right?
But it's affecting the officer's perception and grading and analyzing the results of the test. I mean, somebody may have a torn ACL and they don't perform well on the field sobriety test, and the officer chalks it up to the torn ACL and decides not to arrest. So, I mean, you know, on scene, as these things are transpiring, the verbalization of what could be wrong with an individual, it will affect the action of the officer.
Mr. Kaneshiro, Justice McKenna has a question.
Thank you.
Mr. Kaneshiro, I realize you have a lot of experience with these kinds of cases, so I was just really wondering, since the police officer here and in other cases have testified that without asking these questions, they wouldn't conduct the test, what happens when there's a language barrier with the defendant that's pulled over?
So sometimes they don't administer the test at all. Sometimes they will bring another officer on scene who can who speaks the language. Sometimes they'll try their best. And, you know, sometimes the person understands the instructions and sometimes they don't. You know, one of the, I know this is not here, but, you know, very often when you're dealing with a police officer, they'll just say, oh, yes, 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 I understand. Yes, 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 yes. And then, you know, it really kind of shows that they didn't, but it is difficult when there is a language barrier.
Very well. Mr. Kaneshiro, anything else for the court at this time, or did you want to save time for rebuttal?
I'll save. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Kaneshiro. We'll turn to Mr. Vincent. Mr. Vincent, your argument. And don't forget to unmute.
Thank you, Your Honor. I guess it appears that the questions are revolving mainly around whether or not the SFST is a fruit of the poisonous tree of the MR, the medical rule-out questions, assuming that the medical rule-out questions are interrogation. The definition of the fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine prohibits the use of evidence at trial, which comes to light as a result of the exploitation of the previous illegal act of the police. And that assumes that there is a causal nexus between the, the illegal act in this case, asking the questions, not Mirandized. I don't think it's even an illegal act at this point, but I'll discuss that a little bit later. I do concede that in conclusion of law 17 and also in findings of fact 6, 8, and 11, Officer Morgan states that he would not have administered the SFST without asking these three different questions, permission, medical rule questions, and whether they understood the instructions. But I don't think that that legally prohibited him from administering the SFSTs. So I don't think he was under any legal prohibition from performing the SFSTs, assuming that he didn't ask these questions. There are reasons why they ask these. And I think one of the important ones in the medical rule question is that they don't want the suspect to injure themselves during the course of the SFSTs. Also, pre-existing medical conditions like diabetes probably needs to be taken care of as soon as possible if the suspect is aware himself that that might be the reason for his impairment or a lack of physical coordination. So,
Mr. Vincent, we have a question from Justice Wilson.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, CJ. Mr. Vincent, thank you for focusing on this question about the extent to which the fruit of the poisonous tree depends on the intent of the officer or intent depends on the illegality of the evidence. Because I think you were making the point that Officer Morgan would not be engaging in illegal activity necessarily by giving the SFST. And then you said, I think you premised that on, and there wouldn't be anything illegal about it if there hadn't been the preceding medical rule out questions. But that brings me to my point. Accepting that what the record says seems to be true, which is that the illegal activity preceded and was necessarily connected to the giving of the SFST, what difference does it make if the SFST could itself have been admissible without being gotten through illegal conduct? Because after all, isn't that what fruit of the poisonous tree is about? For the government to gather evidence, it must follow legal procedures. And if by gathering legal evidence, such as the testimony of another witness, the government takes action that's, say, aggressive towards a defendant, it forces a defendant to give the name of another witness whose testimony would be admissible, it seems straightforward that fruit of the poisonous tree would suppress that testimony. So help me with that. Given the fact that there seems to be a direct link between the SFST and this, conceding for purposes of this argument, this illegal conduct by the government, why wouldn't fruit of the poisonous tree apply?
Well, we don't believe that the officer's subjective intent or subjective belief is the deciding factor here. It should be the what a reasonable officer would believe that he could do in this situation. Let me just clarify one thing. I guess there's if this court finds that the medical rule out questions are interrogation. It seems to me there's three possibilities. Number one, the officers could just always Mirandize OVUI suspects in every case. Okay, I wouldn't recommend that because I think as Justice Nakayama mentioned in the previous oral argument we had in December is that often when people misinterpret these Miranda warnings as that I can refuse to do the standard field sobriety test. And I don't think there is any right to refuse to do the standard field sobriety test. Okay. The second option would be to...
Oh, I don't understand. Why isn't there a right? You don't have to take a field sobriety test, right?
The officer obviously can't physically make somebody perform the SFST, but there's no legal right to not perform it because it's an observation of physical coordination, not a statement.
Well, I mean, I think you're now describing whether once it's taken, it's admissible, but I think a citizen's entitled to say, no, I'm not going to take a field sobriety test.
Well, as a practical matter.
They can't be prosecuted for that. Legal action can't be taken against them. I mean,
I'm not sure if that's correct. I mean, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I think that if, for example, if
there could be a civil remedy, but they can't be prosecuted.
They can't be prosecuted. I don't know.
Well, I'm sorry to get you diverted, but it was an interesting.
Yeah, it would.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
If the suspect refused to perform the SFSTs, they could be charged with failing to obey the command of a police officer, for example. It doesn't happen. We just, if they don't want to do the SFSTs, we just let it go, okay? But the problem the problem with that, of course, is that if you allow people just to refuse the SFSTs, then it becomes a question, do we have enough evidence to keep them from getting back in the car and driving again, which is a problem, okay? I guess the solution that I would ask for is that the officer can go ahead and ask the medical rule out questions, okay? But we just can't adduce it at trial. If you believe that that's interrogation and it should not be induced as evidence.
All right, so what you're advocating for or suggesting is if those questions are impermissible, then the answer should be suppressed, but the test itself should not be suppressed.
That's correct.
Why in your view is the test not a fruit of the legal questions if that's what we determine they are?
Well, for two reasons. I don't think that there's anything in the medical rule out questions that, so to speak, let the cat out of the bag or would affect their performance on the test. If they didn't answer them, they would still perform the same on the test as they otherwise would, right? Second thing is it's a different nature of evidence we're collecting in this case. It's not a statement. We're not seizing anything from this person that's not visible to the public, in open view. So I don't think there's any, we don't believe that there's any causal connection between asking the medical rule out questions and the performance on the SFSTs.
All right, Justice McKenna, followed by Justice Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Vincent. It appears that we're talking about you were talking in the context of what happens in the future, but in this specific case, how do you get around the officer's testimony that without responses to these questions, the officer would not have administered the SFST?
Well, I mean,
the officer perhaps could have testified that I would not have administered the test to this OVUI suspect if he would have been wearing a yellow shirt. You know, it's not legally, we don't believe it's legally relevant as to whether or not it should be admissible at trial. Okay. It's his subjective understanding. And I think that the reason why HBD tells, or I think the reason why he understands that he has to ask these questions is the safety issue, as to we don't want to let the suspect stumble around on the sidewalk if he's got some serious problems, say with his knee, or we don't want to let him stumble around too long if he's going into diabetic shock and he should be transported to the hospital rather than administered the SFST. I think it puts the police in a difficult position if you don't allow them to ask these medical rule out questions.
And I do have a follow-up. Did you say that you believe that if someone does refuse to perform an SFST or participate, they could be arrested for disobeying a police?
Well, it's never come up, obviously. We've never charged anybody for that. But I guess my feeling is that it's something that the officer has a legal right to ask them to do, and they should perform.
So that applies to everyone, even though my understanding is the manuals are very pretty clear that the SFSTs are really not very good for people over the age of 65 because of the balance issues that they have.
Well, these tests, they've all been validated. I don't know. I guess
they're not validated for people over 65. But are you saying that people over 65 will be
if they're not validated, then that should go to the weight of the evidence rather than to their admissibility. And also, I would point out that the SFST is validated to a degree of probability that the defendant has a 0.08 blood alcohol content or not. They're not validated as to whether or not a person would be impaired if they displayed the clues on the standard field sobriety test. So these tests are all basically have to be interpreted by they're basically lay testimony. These are not adduced as expert testimony. I mean, we do go through these, you know, we make sure that they're done in a standard way and so forth, I guess for purposes of comparison, but there's no real, I guess, foundation required for them other than the fact that they were done and the officer viewed the performance in the test and is conveying that performance to the trier of fact in court.
Very well, Justice Wilson has a follow-up question.
Thank you. Mr. Vincent, I'm trying to get clear this requirement that you seem to suggest that the evidence itself be inadmissible in order for it to be subject to fruit of the poisonous tree. But let me just be clear. Are you saying that it doesn't matter what the illegality is that precedes the SFSTs? Their very nature of the SFST and the questions that precede them are such that they aren't subject to the fruit of the poisonous tree. In other words, that logically would seem to me to mean that if the police officer physically injures or in some way aggressively attempts to persuade a citizen that they have to take the SFT, and then they do, that previous illegality presumably in violation of the right to be free from that sort of violation of due process, wouldn't matter. You're not suggesting that, are you?
I'm having a hard time imagining a situation where that would apply, but I'm not arguing that.
Well, I can imagine a situation where it might apply, where the police officer threatens a citizen and says, unless you take the test, you're going to suffer some very severe consequences. That might be an example.
Well, if he told us, I don't want to go too far into this.
Well,
we could arrest him for failing to perform SFST. I think the problem with the district court's finding fact was that her assumption that simply because Officer Morgan subjectively said he would not have administered the SFSTs, that created a causal connection with whether or not we had a right to perform the SFSTs.
Well, it sounds like you don't believe the police officer. You decided not to believe the police officer, but why wouldn't the judge believe the police officer when the judge said that?
Well, I believe that the police officer subjectively believes that he's not going to perform the SFSTs. I'm just saying that the police officer, a reasonable police officer in his position, would not feel that he was constricted to not perform the SFSTs if he didn't answer those questions. I think a reasonable police officer could perform the SFSTs regardless of whether he answered any of these three questions.
Justice McKenna.
Could legally do that.
I think my question is really along the lines of what Justice Wilson was just asking, which is, in this case, we have a police officer whose credibility was judged by the district court, who testified that he wouldn't have done it but for responses, and the district court so found. So it seems to me that what we need to do is address this case. What you are arguing is that you think that the police officer was wrong, and that might be something for police training in the future. But in this case, how can we question this district court's credibility determination on this issue?
Well, just let me clarify. I'm not challenging the statement, the findings of the facts here, that he said that he would not have performed it. What I'm challenging is the causal connection, whether or not—
I'm sorry, did the district court make a causal connection?
The district court made a causal connection in conclusion of law number 17, right? In the second sentence, right? So right. That was the part of that conclusion of law that I appealed from, okay? Not the first sentence, okay?
But how is that not a mixed question of fact or law?
It is a mixed factor law, but I don't disagree with the finding of fact part of it. I disagree with the conclusion of law part of it. That it is creates this causal nexus. I do not believe that the officer's subjective belief about whether he is going to perform SFST based on their is creates a causal connection.
Even though he testified that he wouldn't have done it.
Well,
he himself would not have performed this test.
I think I've reiterated it sufficiently. I don't think his subjective intent is relevant to this issue.
Is that because there's not a legal prohibition on performing the test without answers to these questions?
That's correct. As was stated in Ochima, okay, which was decided not too long ago, the defendant's performance in the SFST does not constitute incriminating statements. The privilege against self-incrimination is a bar against compelling communications or testimony. Okay, it does not bar the exhibition of physical characteristics of coordination.
All right, very well. Anything else that you'd like to raise with the court at this time, Mr. Vincent?
I think that's all. Thank you.
All right. Well, then we'll go back to Mr. Kaneshiro for his rebuttal. Kaneshiro.
Thank you.
3 minutes.
Thank you very much. So, you know, during Mr. Vincent's argument, I heard a couple of things. And, you know, I don't think that it's a foregone conclusion that once somebody is suspected of operating a vehicle under the influence, that a standardized field sobriety test will be administered. You know, based on the record in this case, that there are some gatekeepers to whether or not the field sobriety test is administered. Number one, they have to consent. Number two, the medical rule out questions have to be asked. And number three, the answers to do you understand the instructions has to be yes. And the answer to do you have any questions has to be no. And, you know, absent those questions being asked and answered, the field sobriety test is not administered. I think the record in this case is clear that the field sobriety test would not be administered. And with respect to, you know, forcing somebody to participate in a field sobriety test, the record in this case is that the officer said, I asked him if he would be willing to participate in a standardized field sobriety test, and he agreed. So, you know, it wasn't a directive, it wasn't an order. It was a question, and that question is, are you willing to participate? And according to the officer, if he said no, he would have been arrested. And that's why, you know, we had argued that that question itself is interrogation because of State versus Firm, and the negative inference that can be drawn for refusing to submit to a test is that, you know, you would not have passed. But those are all gatekeepers to the actual test being administered, and gatekeepers to the results as a byproduct. The last thing that I want to point out is, you know, State versus Wyatt, and I raised this in my application. You know, it is a relatively old case, and I do believe that the field sobriety test is not purely an exhibition of physical coordination. At the last oral argument, I think that we had on this issue, I had mentioned, you know, some other states, and one of the states is Oregon, and Oregon views portions of the standardized field sobriety test as testimonial. You know, this court in Jones, State versus Jones, said that the field sobriety tests are psychophysical tests. They test the person's short-term memory, ability to understand instructions, the ability to carry out instructions. And, you know, all of those things ask a person to disclose the contents of their mind, their level of understanding.
Mr. Kaneshiro, didn't we effectively revisit this issue in Uchima?
I think we...
testimonial or not raised in Uchima and disposed of by this court. So in effect, you're asking us to overrule a decision that's just about a year old, right?
Correct. But I don't think that, you know, the proper argument, the arguments were properly articulated to the court in Uchima. So that's why, you know, I bring it up. I think that's it.
All right. Well, I appreciated our arguments by both of our counsel. Thank you very much. And the court will take this matter under advisement.
Thank you.
Ua ho'o ku'u ia mai ne kea aha ho'o kolo kolo ki'e ki'e hano hano oka moko aina o Hawaii. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now adjourned. Stopping recording. Oops. Disabling. Oops, sorry. Bye. Okay, that's it.